Now, welcome to another inspiring edition of Sound Insight with Dr. Tom Curran.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. This is Dr. Tom Curran. And yes, still Camino reflections, but we're getting close to the end. Today, I think you'll enjoy these reflections as I talk about this new stage, this new aspect of making the walk now that I'm close to the end. And I think I'm going to end up finishing my reflections on the Camino by the end of this week. And so I look forward to being able to sort of share with you the totality of the journey that will then get back to me sharing with you new insights from home. All right, God bless. Hey, this is Dr. Tom Curran, the host of Sound Insight, but also a realtor serving wonderful folks like you in the state of Washington and in Idaho. I've had the privilege and pleasure of helping dozens of families in the last 2.5 years discern and find a strategy, a path, and a plan to help their families find a whole new life in Eastern Washington and Northern Idaho. If I could be of service to you in that, I would love to. Please reach out, drtomcurran.com, drtomcurran.com. I want to welcome you to the next stage of my journey on hiking the Camino. So today, I'm launching from Tria Castella. And I had mentioned in my last video that when I got to Tria Castella, I had picked this a particular place to stay at, that I had two options. And again, this particular hostel was something that it had prompted up inside of me. So I knew the pain of ignoring the prompting, which I just shared with you about the day before. Like, you don't know what's at stake in the moment, but discerning is now the time. Is this the time? I think of Acts chapter 3, Peter and John are going up to the temple, as was their custom. This is again after Pentecost, and they see the man who is paralyzed there, who's asking for gold and silver, and he would have been there every day at the beautiful gate, and Peter and John are going past him every day as they're going up to the temple for the evening offering. And the interesting thing was today was a different day for them. Today was the day where Peter felt the prompting to stop and engage that man in conversation. Not other days where he likely saw him, but today was that day. Well, that's what happened to me on the Camino on this day 28. There was a woman that I ended up passing by. And it was interesting how it all happened. So I started my day in the same way, in prayer. And so as I'm praying my rosary, I'm praying for my family, first of all, right? Focusing in on the mystery with each particular family member, mysteries of the rosary. And then I'm also praying for people I've met on the way. So I had finished my rosary for my family, and now I'm praying for people I've met on the way. And this one particular woman popped into my head as someone to pray for. And it was interesting because she's someone that I had passed by a number of times. I had first met her as someone staying in the next room in the hostel where I was staying at. And again, a woman from the United States. And so I didn't end up having much of a conversation with her there. Just, you know, said hello, introduced ourselves, but I didn't feel any prompting at that moment to have like a meaningful conversation with her. Well, just so happened that like a day or two later, again, walking on the path and ended up passing by a little bar where some of the fellow pilgrims were sitting, having a cup of coffee, and there she was again. And so we just acknowledged each other, said hello, kept going. And there was another time when I was, again, in town, and she was sitting with some other pilgrims eating a meal. And once again, waved hello and kept moving on. And I thought it was kind of interesting. I was like, Lord, I keep seeing this woman, but we haven't had any significant conversation, but she's very friendly and remembers my name and is, saying hello. But neither of us like made any specific sense of, oh, let's make sure that we connect and have a conversation. So I was praying for her and I was like, I wonder how she's doing. And I'm wondering, like, what's that all about? Why haven't I had a chance to, or am I supposed to? And why haven't I had a meaningful conversation with her? As that's happening, I look ahead of me on the path and I see a woman that has her color hair. And I'm thinking, oh, you're kidding me. Yeah, and it was her. So I ended up catching up to her and she was going a little bit slower than I would have been walking. But this was a shorter walk this particular day. And I thought, you know what? If there's a conversation to be had here, I'm open to having it. So I said, hello. She said, Tom, hey, great to see you again. And I just said in passing, I said, hey, how many times have we now like crossed paths but not had a conversation? I said, I think this is our time. And she said, absolutely, let's talk. And we ended up having a very meaningful and a really beautiful and powerful conversation that ended up going deep pretty quickly. And so again, when you have conversations like this on the Camino, people tend to have a greater sense of openness because they're there. There's some inflection point in their lives. And so they're there to explore and discover and reflect. And so when opportunities come up, they tend to have a greater sense of willingness to dive in. And so this was a woman that was like that. And so she was a person who had started the Camino with her husband, who was there just to kind of get her launched. And then he left and then she was walking the rest of it alone. It was something that she had wanted to do. She had heard about it from some friends and now it was her time to do it. And she was again at this inflection point where they had sold a business and was now interested in trying to figure out what's next in my life. What's next in this stage of my life? She's in her 50s and so she and her husband have a bit of, a bit of wealth or capacity to be able to say, let's just take a year off. Let's just sort of rest, recover from all of those years of business building and business selling. And let's now just sort of peacefully kind of get level set for what's next in our lives. And so along the way, I then bring up the question, well, is there anything, like as you look at this next stage in your life, I said, is there any way that you incorporate a sense of spirituality, a sense of God in this journey? And very interesting, that came about in part because of, again, her asking me, why are you on the Camino? And I tell the story of this 10X life. And so we explored into that. And I said, how does that strike you? What does that mean for you in your life? And she ended up with a very kind of an interesting starting point. And that was that she would see signs. There were indications that she was receiving that gave her a sense that there was someone watching over her. And the sign was for her feathers. And so she had a number of stories on her Camino where there was a feather that was kind of placed in front of her, like just popped up and appeared in front of her at these poignant moments. And she wasn't exactly sure that it hasn't like broken open the full meaning of it, just that there was some kind of confirmation occurring through this sign. And so I started to explore that with her from the standpoint of, well, what does it mean? And it seemed to mean that there were these, the timing of these things where it was a sign of you are being watched over, you're being taken care of. So then I asked the very natural question, who's doing the watching over? Who's taking care of you? And that then led into her sharing about the place of God in her life.
Hi, this is Dr. Tom Curran, and you know me as the host of Sound Insight. I am also letting folks know that As a realtor licensed in the state of Washington and in Idaho, I love serving Catholic families and others who are discerning a move for yourselves. It's much more than buying or selling a home. It's discerning a whole new life. If that's something that you would find a help in, if I could be of service to you, please be in touch. You can find out more at drtomcurran.com. drtomcurran.com.
And that then led into her sharing about the place of God in her life. And fascinating story, grew up without any real formation in any religious practice, in part because of her mom's untimely passing when she was just 5 years old. And so being brought up in a home with a single dad, the dad would be very hard. He was a very hard worker. And so she would end up being watched by sort of a babysitter or cared for by a neighbor over the course of her day before she was school age. And that woman, unfortunately, was someone who was very a bit rigid and harsh in how she implemented discipline, and did so on the basis of a Christian faith, that she practiced a faith that was a bit, again, the way that it manifested herself in terms of how she communicated to this woman was that this was kind of a harsh, hard, not very compassionate and loving and understanding. And so that had an impact on her. It really, that plus her husband, her dad's non-practice of faith had her grow up through her high school years and then beyond that without any really formal training in any faith at all. Even though it was in America, you'd imagine, gosh, she would have lots of experience with some form of Christianity. And the answer was no, she really didn't. So that's how she had been living through the course of her life. And now here she is in her 50s. And so the idea of God was something that she accepted. She said that she did believe in God. And I said, can we explore that? Said, absolutely. So let's talk about that. And so I was like, well, the most natural question that I'd love to ask people who have a sense of God, but haven't really pondered it deeply or tried to explore how what's at stake in that belief in God, was I said, do you believe that God is personal? And she said, well, yes, I believe God is personal. So not just a vague life force or a spiritual energy or some source of all creation that is impersonal. No, that this God is personal. And then I said, well, does this personal God know you? Is there a concept of a relationship with this personal God who personally created the world and you as this distinct individual? And she said, I never really explored that idea, never really thought about that before. And I said, well, let's imagine if this God is personal, and I want to propose to you that God is personal, not only personal, but knows you personally and wants to communicate with you. I said, is that something that you would be open to? And she said, well, yeah, but I have no idea how to do it. And I just thought of the scriptures, right? Lord, teach us how to pray. Right? How am I supposed to access communication with God if I've never been taught how to pray? I said, well, are you open to having me share some thoughts? She said, well, absolutely. So here we are connecting. The entry point was that she has had a sense of something watching over and caring for her through the symbol of these feathers. And then from there saying, you know, this Camino has been an amazing experience of being able to strip down and focus and reflect. And now there's this sense of timing to open up this conversation around saying, you know what? I would love to learn how to pray. So let's get into that. So I ended up having three different recommendations for her regarding how to pray, three different specific prayers. And I share these with you because these would be things that might in fact be helpful to you in your own life of prayer as well as in terms of sharing with people who maybe have a more vague sense of God, but haven't really explored, is God personal? is God wanting a relationship with me? And how do I open myself to enter into a more personal relationship with the personal God? So the first thing I recommended to her, I said, well, you find a space and a time that can be set apart for you to have this communication with God. So I said, maybe not while you're also walking, because that can distract you. It can be harder to do that as a first natural place. I said, maybe it can be outside. You find a place where you can sit and whether it's, you know, morning or night, whether it's in front of the night sky or a beautiful vista or a garden or flowers or trees or whatever. Or I said, maybe it's in a church. Maybe it's in a church because that will be like a holy environment. That's what it's created for. So you choose a space that's going to be less distracting where you can focus on this communication. And then I said, trust that this God wants to communicate with you more than you want to communicate with God. Trust that this God is more personal than you are, and that this God is waiting and knocking at the door of your life in order to be able to foster a deeper union and a richer connection and a more profound communication in your life. And so it was simple. It was, again, you don't have to make things complicated. So the simple way that I encouraged her to pray was I said, you can go and you can simply say God, or you choose the word that is going to be like most comfortable for you. And she was comfortable with God. I said, God, would you please reveal your love for me? Would you please reveal to me your personal love for me and reveal it in a way that I would know that it's you loving me? Reveal yourself to me as the personal God who knows me, is caring for me, watching over me, and desires to love me and nurture a relationship with me. Now, I said a lot of words there, and maybe that was maybe less simple than I just proposed, but she took it in, she understood it, and it was like, I can do that. That's something that I can do. I can take in that prayer. And it's something that I can do in a space that will be for me, a space that is set apart for this communication. So that was the first prayer. So you can, if you can hear it, and maybe that's something that you might want to take into your own life of prayer as well, is, Lord, I want to grow in my sense of just how personal you are and the personal love you have for me, knowing my situation and taking care of me in this moment. I'm open to that. Please reveal, break open that love that you have for me. Okay. The second had to do with, is there something about the loss of your mother that could potentially be holding you back in your relationship with God? And I brought that up as a second point of prayer because of something that she had said in passing in our conversation, which was, you know what, it was hard to want to even seek a relationship with God, that same God who took away the mother of a five-year-old, right? And so there was a way in which there is maybe deep in her memory, in her heart, a wound, a disappointment, an anger or a bitterness or an anguish over not just I lost my mother, but you, God, took my mother from me. And so one of the things that she had said was, when I'd said to her, do you believe that there is life after death? And she said, yes. And I said, well, for your mom too then. So I said, if we believe or if we accept this idea that your mom is in the hands of God, I said, one of the things that I believe as a Catholic is that your mom in the hands of God sees you, knows what's happening in your life, and is loving you as well. And so I said, one of the second like lanes of prayer, one of the second sort of prayer times that you could take would be for you to ask God, this loving personal God who sees you and knows you and wants to love you in new ways, would be to ask God, Lord, or God, would you please help me to have a sense help me to see, or help me to have an inkling or an insight that my mom is with you and sees me, knows me, and is loving me right now. I would dearly appreciate and would deeply, I would find deeply meaningful a sense of being connected to my mom. Even now, 50 years later, would you do that, Lord? I said, I'm believing that there may be a place in your heart, a place in your memory that has set up a wall, a blockage that is holding back an openness to trust and to receive God more fully in your life. Because if I open and trust this God and receive this Lord to come closer into my life, well, what might happen? Because this is the God who took away my mom as a five-year-old. And again, this can, whatever the thinking is at that age, that can take root and take hold. And so I share that again with you. I shared that with her, and she says, you know, I'm open to doing that. And it was, that was a bit emotional for her, but it was something that she was also open to do it. And again, never really thought of that at all as something that would be a path forward for her life of faith. But that was something that she would also explore. And I share that with you because there may be blockages from your life in your past that were there from some early memory, some early happening that was particularly like disruptive and painful, like the loss of a mom or a dad or some other family circumstance that was disruptive of peace and something that would be typical or ordinary in terms of the growth of our lives. And the Lord wants to heal those things. He wants to remove those blockages. He wants to lift those things. And so please, I encourage you to take that on as a way of praying for yourself as well. The third had to do with the friends that she had been hanging around with, that in her own like circle of friends and neighbors and things like that, there were several people who were practicing Christians and were, in fact, even very involved in churches. And one of them, in fact, was a pastor who would found churches. So she had many friends who were Christian and very overt and active about their Christian faith. And one of the things I found interesting was that none of them had ever had this kind of conversation with her. And who knows, maybe they have been praying for her to be able to have this kind of conversation, to meet somebody who could, in fact, break open the question of Jesus for her life and in her life. And I was the answer to her prayer, to their prayer for her. So I said to her, I said, well, as you're growing in this relationship or this openness to grow in a relationship with God, I said, is there any sense of openness to consider Jesus and to invite Jesus Christ to be someone who comes close to you? And she said, yes. She said that that would be something that she'd be open to as well. And so I said, okay, so for this particular time of prayer, I'm going to encourage you to go into a church, these Catholic churches that are there, because you'll see many images of Christ, whether it's statues or the crucifix or the tabernacle, the presence of Christ. And I said to her, I said, there'll be a sense of Christ's presence in a church for a variety of reasons. The many pilgrims that have prayed there, the millions of pilgrims that will have prayed in these churches through the year, leave this sort of density or of this atmosphere of faith and prayer that was expressed there. I said, that's something that you can lean into and something that you can be blessed by. But I said, go into a church, come into, again, a place of solitude and silence, and then you can specifically address Jesus. Jesus, if you're real, show yourself to me. Jesus, if you're really there, reveal yourself to me. Did you hear those prayers? Very simple, and it's something that you can do. Jesus, if you're really there and you know me, you see me, you love me, if you're really there, show yourself to me. And again, do it in a way that I will know that it's you. If you're really there, reveal yourself to me and do it in a way that I'll know it's you. I'm not just thinking, oh, this is me, it's my own thinking. No, it's you. And so she was again saying, yes, I am open to doing that. That's something that I would love to do and I'm going to do. And so that was the conversation we had, and it unfolded. And there were many other things we ended up talking about as we walked our own way. And then we ended up reaching that natural, like, endpoint, she says, you know what I'm going to do? She just stopped. And she said, I feel like I'm supposed to wait for this particular couple that I had seen and talked to on the path a number of times. And I'm getting a little tired because I was walking a little faster than her. And so what ended up happening was we ended up stopping. She says, I'm going to stop right here. I'm going to sit in this chair. I'm going to wait for them. And I said, great, I'm going to go my own way. And at that moment, she looked down and she just tapped me on the shoulder. She said, look there. And literally at our feet where we had stopped to part ways was a feather. So for her, it was just another one of those wonderful confirmations that, in fact, she was being watched over. She was being cared for. And so for her, it was a beautiful way of receiving the answer to that prayer. Communicate to me in a way that I know that this is you, Lord, and not just me thinking. So that feather ended up coming into play at that final moment. So there you go. There's my story for today. I hope and pray that that was a blessing to you. And continue to follow me on my journey of hiking the Camino.
Hey, welcome to, I'm now actually in week 5 of my Camino journey. Here's day 29. And I made it to Soria yesterday. And so here I am today in Soria. It was a very interesting sort of arrival because people had warned me, some couple of guys who had gone ahead of me, and I'd stay in touch with them. One guy in particular, he's like, yeah, it gets crowded. just you wait and see. Soria, here comes everybody, right? About half of the people who walk the Camino are not beginning back in St. Jean-Pied-de-Port, which is that sort of 500-mile journey, but instead are walking about a 70-mile journey beginning in Soria. And it's not like, oh, we're special because we did the whole thing, but rather a lot of the folks just don't have the time. And it was so interesting because I would see in this bigger city, Soria, compared to a lot of the other small towns, so many pilgrims who are starting in Soria, and you could tell because all their clothes were in nice, clean, you know, condition. Their backpacks were all nice and clean and new, and their hiking poles had the rubber tips still in place on the bottom, and their shoes were nice and clean. So interesting to see. It's like, oh, You're new. Oh, there's another guy like me. You've been at this for a while. And so, well, one of the things that happened in my discernment, I shared with you previously that I had initially intended to and mapped out a 40-day period from departure to arrival back home. And that made my Camino 34 days with a couple of days for travel on each side. And if needed, like basically one day, maybe 2 days of buffer in case something went wrong. And I just had to like I rest because I was sick or injured or something. And you remember that I ended up saying I can walk faster or I will walk faster or it's really not faster, but longer. I'll walk longer days to be able to build in some rest days and ended up doing that sufficiently to be able to cut back from the 40 days down to 36 days. So ended up saying, okay, I got this. I'm going to make it home. Instead of October 4th, I'm going to arrive on October 1st. So let's see, 3, 2, 1. So 3 days. So yeah, from 40 to 37 days. Well, yesterday I made another decision. And that decision was I can do this faster. I can, instead of arriving home on Tuesday on day 37, I'm going to arrive home on day 34. And to be able to do that, that meant I was going to complete the Camino in 31 days. And completing the Camino in 31 days with those other 3 days of rest that I had taken meant that I was going to be walking from Soria
to Santiago, which is a five-stage process, so essentially 5 days. I was going to do it in just over 2 days. And can I do this? Can I actually walk from Soria to Santiago, which is about 73 miles, 74 miles, in just over 2 days? Well, in order to do that, I had to map it all out. And what that meant was walking on this day from Soria to Palos de Rey, which would have been typically a 2 day walk, 29 miles. I was going to do it in 1 day. It also meant that tomorrow I was going to walk 38 miles. And I ended up going all in. How did I go all in? Well, I went all in because I changed my plane tickets again. Changed my tickets and said, I'm going to do this. Whatever else happens, I'm flying out of Santiago on Friday. No buffer days, no ifs, ands, or buts. I am flying out. And this is on Tuesday now. So this is Tuesday. This is Wednesday. Yeah, Wednesday. So Wednesday, beginning of week five, I'm walking 29 miles. Thursday, I'm walking 38 miles. Friday, I'm walking into town. I'm going to spend the day there. I'm going to get to the airport. I'm getting on a 6 o'clock flight. Why? Why did I do that? I think the biggest reason was interiorly, I was getting a sense that it's time to go home. And that was matching externally what I, in talking with Carrie, was realizing that the burden on her, like her Camino, her pilgrim journey, was one of supporting me. And that meant she was taking on the burdens of caring for the family and the house and all the complications of what it meant to just run our household and the busy lives that we had. And I could tell that it was really wearing on her. So even as I'm getting worn down on the one hand, but stronger on the other hand, there was a sense of saying, if I can do this for her, that would be a great blessing. And so that was my motivation. It wasn't, I'm going to try to be a superhero, or I'm going to try to go to the extreme or something like that. But it was rather, you know what, if there's any possible way I can support Carrie, it would be by getting home sooner. And that would be a huge gift to her and to the family. And so I made the decision and didn't tell her. I didn't tell anybody in the family. Okay, now here it is though. Time to go. Let's do this. So I wake up again. It's dark. I know that if I'm going to go 29 miles, that's about 5 miles longer than any other stage that I had taken to this point. I'd gone about 24 miles four times in the course of the Camino now. And I knew the impact that it had had on me. It was hard. My feet were swollen and it was I was really dragging and exhausted by the end of the day. And now I'm going to go like 20% further than my longest days. And again, this is just a few days since I had dislocated my other ankle. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do this. So got up early, still dark, and started walking the path. And sure enough, here comes everybody. I bumped into a bunch of people, even though it was, again, pitch black out. But it wasn't that early. It was, I think, it was maybe 6:30 when I left. And sure enough, started bumping into. And that was actually quite helpful. And that's going to be one of the themes that shows up here. It's something I mentioned to you. I'm going to mention more fully tomorrow, is the gift of other hikers. Even though you're not talking with them, just other people that are on the journey, that are, how supportive they are. So I'm going to talk more about that tomorrow on my 38-mile day. But for today, I'm going to focus in on a couple of other themes, right? So the first is this, is that what I just shared with you is sometimes you might be asked to go beyond what you believe are the limits of what's possible for you. And to do that, you're going to need a source of motivation to be able to go beyond. And for me, that source was, it was Carrie. It was my call as a husband to support and encourage and help her walk her path. And so as a husband, but also then as a father for my kids, because she was carrying the parenting burden essentially by herself, that this was part of my call, that I was willing to do it for her. So it wasn't about me saying, I'm going to achieve this next level goal in my life. Well, this theme ended up appearing in the course of my day. So, once again, starting my day with the, it was probably now 2.5-3 hours of prayer for my family, praying the rosary peacefully, slowly, just praying until I felt like, okay, I'm done praying for this kid and this mystery. Let me move on to the next one and the next mystery. And again, finding that very beautiful, you know, very powerful. And then after that, I arrived at the first break. I knew that if I was going to walk a more extended day, that I was going to have to be more conservative about taking breaks. So I got to a coffee shop that was like, okay, you know what? Let me just stop. Let me get a quick cup of coffee. I had my day pack with me, so I was just going to eat a little bit of food to give me the energy I needed and take some water in so I stay hydrated and keep moving. And this was another one of those divine appointment moments, because the timing of it all was a matter of seconds. Because the timing that it took for me to order the coffee, drink the coffee, have the little bit of food, get myself set, and then to walk out back onto the path. Again, the timing of it all, I get back onto the path just as this young lady is walking down the same path. And so she was walking at a good clip, so really pacing me about the same pace, that if she had arrived there 10 seconds earlier, I would never have caught her. This conversation doesn't happen. If she had arrived there 5 to 10 seconds later, she wouldn't have caught me, and this conversation doesn't happen. So the window of the moment of encounter was that precise that, again, it was just so striking. So this woman, the youngest lady that I met and ended up spending time talking to on the Camino, 21-year-old Canadian young lady. And she was, once again, at this place in her life where she had the window of time. She was on a semester break. And so it was something that she just wanted to do. She wanted the challenge and had discovered it. Like, she discovered it on social media as like, this would be really cool. This would be a fun thing to do. I'm going to do it. And so and I was like, you're 21. Did you feel comfortable like walking this on your own? And she said, well, you know what? It was a little bit scary at first. It was a little bit like, okay, am I going to be okay? Am I going to be safe and all that? But she said over just a matter of the first few days, she realized, you know what? This was going to be safe, but something else happened. And it had to do with doing a hard thing. So here's our theme today, doing a hard thing. So she ended up starting on a version of the Camino that was harder than the Camino Frances, the most popular one. It was the Camino del Norte. So it was a harder trail to follow. And after just a few days of doing that trail, she realized, you know what, this is too much for me. I'm going to reconnect back to the Camino Frances, and I'm going to do that trail instead. And so she did. But after just doing that for a couple of days, she came to the conclusion that this is too much. I'm not going to make it. And she started to look for a plane ticket home. She did more than that. She bought a plane ticket home. And now she needed to take a bus to the airport. And so she got a bus ticket online, and she was basically saying, I'm done. I'm done. This was too much. So she starts walking to the bus station to get on the bus, to get to the airport, go home. And she ends up passing a park. And she said she went and she sat down on a bench in the park, and she just started weeping, just started crying over the fact that she failed, that she started out doing this thing that she had this like enthusiasm for, this energy for, she can handle this, she's got this. And now it was just ending. And she had this moment of reflection. And the word that came up was regret. And she said she was faced with a dual regret. There was two forms of the regret. The first was, I regret coming here. I regret it because it introduced me to challenges that were too much for me. And so I need to go home. I regret that I took on that challenge. And so now I'm going back to a place that's more comfortable and easy for me, a place that will be more like just surrounding me with a sense of I'm safe. But she said, then something else emerged in her. And it was this conviction that if she did get on that bus, if she ended up going to that bus station and then getting to the airport and getting on that plane, that there would be another regret that would emerge. And that regret was leaving the Camino. She said, I realized that when I got home, back to that safe place, back to that comfortable place, away from this hard trail, I would regret more leaving the hard path and leaving the Camino, stopping doing this difficult thing. I would regret that more than the regret that I have right now, the regret that I actually ever took it on. And she said that realization in her mind gave her enough of a conviction to stand up, stop her tears, and get back on the trail. And so she canceled her plane ticket, did not go to that bus station, and started back on the Camino. And she ended up like arriving at one of those albergues again, one of those dormitories, and ended up having a very poignant, timely moment of sharing and conversation, where at this particular albergue, it was a monastery setting. And the person from the monastery that was there introduced a time of prayer and then had some sharing about, talk about how your Camino's going, what's going on. So she shared this story. And see, she said she got an immense amount of affirmation and encouragement and support that said, we are so proud of you for making that decision to say, I don't want to regret the path that I took. I don't want to regret not having quit. I'm going to continue on. And people were hugging her, and she just felt such a sense of like relief that she hadn't done it, and a new sense of energy to continue on. Now, a couple of things that were interesting about this. The first was, it didn't make the Camino easier. It was still hard. But she realized that there is this basic dynamic in our lives. And it's the hard easy versus the easy hard. You can choose to do what is hard. And if you choose to do the hard thing, you know what you'll discover? Life will get easier. When you're choosing to do the virtuous thing, it's hard. It's not pleasant. It's not fun. It's not comfortable. It's hard. And acknowledging that, but you do the hard thing, especially the hard thing that's virtuous or godly, or the good thing, life will get easier. But if you choose to leave the hard path, you choose to do what's easy, you're going to discover that life will get harder. When you choose the path that's more easy and comfortable and soft and pleasant, because you want to jump away from, you want to exit from that difficult situation you're in, you just might discover that life's going to get harder for you, because in fact, growing involves doing hard things. St. Thomas Aquinas says, what turns a boy into a man is the bonum arduum. That's Latin, the difficult good, the arduous good. It's the good thing that comes about only as a result of persistence, willingness to sacrifice. It takes a bit of courage. It takes this endurance. It takes a willingness to face the stress and the pressure and the lack of comfort. And you press through and you stay with it. And then the good thing happens. The difficult good. And here she is as a 21-year-old, willing to embrace the difficult good. It's going to lead to a deeper maturity. It's going to lead to a more virtuous life, a life that is more honorable as a human being, and done in the context of faith, a more godly life. And so I share that with you to say that this young lady ended up being a wonderful witness to the hard easy is the path to take. The difficult good is, in fact, the call, the call that we have, right? What's our call? Our call is to pick up our cross and follow the Lord daily, right? If you come and follow me, you should expect a difficult good, a crucifying good, a good that is, in fact, a bit overwhelming. So this also leads to priests. I've mentioned to you along the way that I encountered three priests in conversation. The first one, there was, like, again, a lack of real willingness to engage, and I was a little bit disappointed. I had hopes for a better interaction with him and all of that, and then I ended up moving forward, so missed out on any other communication with him, and was really hoping for something more. And I had prayed for him. I had been praying for him for the Lord to bring about blessings in his life. Well, lo and behold, God is a redeeming God. God is a God of second chances. Because as I ended up departing from this woman, this young lady, we got to a city, and she saw a friend of hers, and she said, "Hey, I'm going to take a break and go have lunch." Well, I knew I needed to continue on because I had my 29-mile journey in front of me. So I continued pressing forward. And I ended up coming to, again, a couple of small towns, took another little break. And I said, I just got to keep pushing forward. And it's about now 1:45 in the afternoon. And so I still have a few hours to go in my day, several hours. And I'm walking through this tiny town and I'm not seeing anybody. And all of a sudden I look ahead and there's this little, like, porch area, and there's someone sitting in a chair. He has a hat on, and he's sitting outside of, I come to find out, it's another little hostel. And as I'm approaching, I'm looking at him, he's looking at me, and I'm thinking, he looks familiar. Yes, it's that priest. It's that priest. He takes his hat off. I'm like, "Father, how are you?" And he says, "Hey, Dr. Tom, how's it going?" And I'm like, "Well, do you mind if I sit down?" "Absolutely." And all of a sudden, there's this different sense of communication. There's this sort of enthusiasm and this openness, and we end up having this richer conversation. It just lasted about 10 or 15 minutes, but it had to do with, hey, what's happened? What's transpired on our caminos, on our journeys since we last met? And my first question was, how did you get here? How did you get ahead of me? Like, I knew how many miles I'd been walking, and I'm thinking there's no way he passed me. And sure enough, he had taken a bus to get to this point because he wanted to make it to Sharia by Monday, right? So from there to Sharia, it was going to be 5 days. And so I didn't say anything about my path. Actually, I did. I told him about my path. I was going to get there on Friday. And so beyond that, though, we just had a chance to talk a bit about the encounters we had had. And he was much more like attuned to talking about, we are walking this path as pilgrims, and that this is a journey of faith that is specifically associated with our faith. And I was just really like, that for me was so life-giving that we could share at that level. That's what I was hoping for way back when I felt like there was a resistance and a wall and no interest. Now all of a sudden there was this sense of great openness and willingness to share and talk. And he lamented the fact that there were so few people walking the Camino who were doing so on the basis of their Catholic faith for Catholic reasons and for the actual traditional historical reasons that people walk the Camino. And so, again, beautiful timing of this whole thing. This wasn't exactly a matter of seconds. This was a matter of minutes, because if I had gotten there about 10 minutes later, I would have missed him. He was only sitting on that porch because they had a 2 o'clock entry time for the Camino, for the albergue. He wasn't able to go to his room and rest until 2 o'clock. And I ended up passing by about 10 minutes of two. And so that's why we spoke for that 10 or 15 minutes. And then he was able to access his room. But I'm like, thank you, Lord. And the last thing that ended up happening was that as it was time for him to go in, I said, Father, would you give me a blessing? And so I knelt down right there on the porch, and he ended up extending his hands over me, and he prayed just a beautiful, like full, like heartfelt, soulful blessing over me and over my life and over the path I was going to walk. And I was so grateful for that. And I felt that was so fitting, and it was redemptive, because our last moment together, the last interaction between us, was a priestly interaction. That he wasn't there as just this guy. He wasn't just there as, oh, he happens to be a priest who happens to be talking to a Catholic theologian. No, he was functioning as a priest in my regard, and he was ministering a priestly blessing over my life. And that for me was a beautiful way to finish our communication together with the blessing. But he blessed me, shook hands, I went my way, and he went his. So I was very appreciative of that blessing for the journey. When you're facing a difficult path, a cross that you have to carry, a difficult good, it can be easy to want to quit. It can be easy to want to say, I just want to choose, I regret having faced this difficult path, and to choose what's easy or easier. And when we do that, we just might discover that things get harder. There's the alternative, though. Choose the difficult good with the grace of God. Choose the cross with the grace of Christ. Call upon the blessings that the Lord wants to minister to your life through the priesthood, through the sacraments, through the life of prayer. And you know what? You will get what you need to finish the path that is yours to take. Now, he blessed me. I didn't magically get transported 10 miles ahead. I still had to walk that path. It was still a difficult path. It was not easy finishing it off. Those last 5 miles that were longer than any other trip that I had taken were marked by pouring rain. that was not easy or fun. It was difficult. It was a difficult good. But when I got to the end of that journey, when I made it to the hostel that I was staying in, I was so grateful that I had done it. So grateful for that difficult good. And got into my room. I had the food I needed there, so I didn't even have to leave. Set myself up for success. I said, I'm simply going to rest. I'm not going to walk around. I'm not going to go anywhere. I'm just going to sit and rest my feet because I know that I'm facing tomorrow the most difficult stage in my journey. And I'll talk to you about that tomorrow. All right. God bless.